Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, my good buddy, producer extraordinaire, and graphics card snob, Cameron McCoy. How are you doing, friend?
You know, I'm good, man. Yeah, man. Graphics cards. Everybody should just get a 3070 or 3080 right now. What's your problem? Why don't you all have them right now?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually in the webcam at 210 frames a second. It's so real. Yeah. It's like I'm there. Right, Cameron?
Yeah. It's like there's a shortage or something, or I don't know. It's weird.
Shortage or the same people are buying it over and over again. Did I tell you that I was at like my local gas station and I saw a graphics card deal go down?
Oh, wow.
Like cash for a card kind of thing. It was one of the 30 series. I didn't want to like be too nosy and be like, hey, guys, what are you doing? You know?
I can only imagine like that was like a really intense scene from like some Michael Mann movie. You know, like, I mean, that exchange had been really, really tense.
I mean, I did, you know, look and like I felt like these guys were very all business. It was a very professional dealing, you know, but it's just weird to see somebody anywhere flash hundreds of dollars in cash, like out in a parking lot. Like your little alarm bells go off and go, hey, something's not right. Then I saw the graphics card and I just thought, how many people don't know what's happening here? And they just see this guy just exchanging like a ton of money. So anyway, Cameron, we have got a lot of Magic the Gathering to talk about. Really just, again, two big segments today. We're going to talk about what we've been playing. And then I just want to talk a little bit, put kind of a bow on the Time Spiral Remastered discussion because we didn't really touch it last week. It's coming out on Friday. There's been kind of a lot of highs and lows with that set, I would say. But first, I'm interested, what have you been up to playing-wise?
Lots of historic this week. This was a historic week, and so the funny thing is I was playing a ton of historic, didn't even realize that the historic anthology had dropped until you texted me. Because I had not seen a single card from Historic Anthology. I had not played a single card, and I forgot that they were actually out in the wild. And so the second day, I went ahead and purchased or just used my wild cards to pick up Death Shadow and Declaration in Stone. Because those are like the only two cards that right now I'm most interested in playing. And I feel like we'll have some semblance of a lasting impact, I guess, in historic. Black Red, Loras, Death Shadow. I subbed out the Skyclave Knights that I had in that and put in two Death Shadow. Just kind of ran with that deck, and it totally works. You know, there's a lot of times where you're at seven life and and you just can have a pretty decent Death Shadow. This is nowhere near the power level of something like Modern. There's just not the tools around to really put it over the top, in my opinion. But it totally works. It just becomes a role player in tandem with Kruxa, Loras, and Red Horde Arcanist. Like, that's all there is to it. So, Black Red Death Shadow, it's a thing, but I just don't know if it's actually going to make a huge impact or it's going to take that deck and put it into the top tier of what it already is, you know?
Yeah, so I'll just piggyback on that because I've been playing that deck a lot this week too. I'm playing the mirror more than half the time right now. I don't know what your experience is, but I think people are stumbling upon the idea that this is quite good, and here's why. Last week, I stipulated that I didn't think it could answer the problems of green-red aggro. Well, the truth is, it does, and here's how. You have access to multiple fatal pushes, right? So a lot of the lists are playing 2, 3, 4 fatal push, and then 4 blood chief. I always call it blood chief.
Whatever.
That one is super good, and the versatility of being able to hit a planeswalker actually matters quite a bit more than you might think. You're at 4 mana and you can just hit stuff. You can just get a Nissa off the board. That stuff is crazy. Now, here's what I want to say about this archetype, because I do now actually think it's tier 1. there's three kind of flavors. There's the black, red, white that plays Ranger Vios, Adanto Vanguard. In my experience, that one's been the most, quote, all in on losing your life. It also plays the other, the two mana Death Shadow like card. Whose name I've forgotten as well. And that one's probably the worst of the three, in my opinion. The black red one is the one that you see the most. Now, are you playing the one that like also plays Stitcher Supplier and Cruxa and that whole package?
Yeah, yeah. So you're using your graveyard as a resource.
Yeah. So that is probably the most common one, and you see it a lot. There are some like changes that people have made playing cards like Feed the Swarm, some other like, you know, you're obviously playing a lot more of the lose three life lands to kind of get yourself down. Agadeem's Awakening and Shatter Skull Pass or
Shatter, yeah,
whatever. The red mana. One. Yeah, it's Shatter Skull something or other. I don't read these cards, I just play them. But Cameron, here's what I found. Grixis is quite good, and I've actually had a stellar record with it. And you might ask yourself, what in the world is the blue card that you're playing? Right?
Yeah. Opt.
Opt is in it. There's basically eight blue cards or seven. Okay. The big thing that's broken it open for me that has won a ton of these games for me is Seagate Stormcaller. Do you remember this card?
That's the one unlimited hand size, right?
No. That's the land. No. Seagate Stormcaller is the one in a blue for a 2/1. It enters the battlefield, and then the next instant or sorcery you play, you can copy for free.
Oh, sure. So, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this acts like my Snapcaster, but here's what's crazy, Cameron, is it actually copies the spells off a Dreadhorde Arcanist as well.
Mm.
So there are turns where you go turn one Fatal Push, turn two Dreadhorde Arcanist, and then on turn three, you can cast the Fatal Push from your graveyard twice with a Seagate Stormcaller.
It's huge. Yeah.
Or I get to double up on a Thoughtseize with Seagate. Like, that card, and it works totally around their graveyard stuff. Whatever graveyard stuff that they put into play. So I don't know what the mix is. Right now I'm playing four Dreadhorde Arcanist, and I'm playing three Seagate Stormcallers. I need to switch some of these things around because...
Interesting.
In my iteration of the deck, Cruxa's been really bad, and Young Pyromancer's just been okay. But... The crux of what I'm trying to build here is way more about the tempo element.
Yeah.
And I've tried other things. Like I'm playing two Chart of Course because there's a lot of times where I'm able to also play that off of Dreadhorde Arcanist with Claim to Fame or, you know, just being able to like generate some cards. Because I find in the Grixis one, another advantage that you have is you have the ability to draw cards. You can use, Village Rites in the black red one. Sometimes you see that, sometimes you don't. But yeah, it's just been interesting to see like these blowout turns with Seagate Stormcaller and games that I have no business winning, just like coming out of clean air because I'm able to turn one Fatal Push into three Fatal Pushes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or three Thought Seizes activates Death Shadow. Like, I mean, man, there's just so much utility there, you know? That's great.
Yeah, and it basically acts like Snapcaster in the deck. Perfect, no, the mana's wrong. I know that. There's a bunch of things I have to fix with it. But this is it's one of those times that I've tuned something and I've been really excited about it, which doesn't come around very often. I play Dress other people's decks quite a bit. but yeah, I've been really happy with how that's gone. But Cameron, I played against this deck so much. I played against that, and then like mono red just seems to be kind of off the map. Goblins I don't see, but I've played against the mirror a lot, and then just these kind of like green white collected company, you know, mono white angels a lot more, like that kind of thing. Have you seen any of these other cards from this anthology see play?
No, I have not. And in a way, that's really bad because I do really feel like something like Blink Moth Nexus is going to. It will find its place. I mean, that card is just so incredibly, you know, has such great utility to it. It's just, there's nothing happening with it. I just haven't seen anything with it. I have played Declaration in Stone and Blue White Control.
Oh, okay.
it's fine. I mean, like, for me, like, having like that turn two Declaration in Stone versus a turn two Doomscar going into exile, you know, where it's like, I'm going to get probably a lot more value out of the Doom Scar.
For sure.
Is still better. And it's really just like playing against like these decks where I Wrath and then having that on turn 4 or 5, that's where Declaration in Stone seems to have like a really good place, just because there's so many Collected Company. Like I play against like the green red Collected Company deck. They're able to rebuild the battlefield very, very quickly. You know, after a Wrath. And so having something like a Declaration in Stone to get rid of two of their whatever, you know, seems to help, but like Pelt Collectors, I guess, but I still just don't know if this is the actual right card for Historic. I still think an instant speed, one mana removal spell would be really, really, really helpful for Historic to make things like mono white, blue white control, any of these white based kind of like mid-rangey decks, they would have a lot more game if they had that one linchpin. And it just doesn't exist yet.
Dude, so, it needs to be, yeah. Path to Exile. It needs to be, like, yeah. Swords to Plowshares is probably too good. Probably. But Path to Exile, like, there to me, Path to Exile is every bit as powerful as Growth Spiral.
Mm-hmm.
It's every bit as powerful as Thoughtseize. Like, I just don't understand what is the thing that's driving it not being in the format. It's not going to be too good. You don't have Snapcaster. You are giving them a land. Like, it's just time, guys. I'm really worried, though, that we're going to get another Historic Anthology, and we're going to get a bunch of, like, Gray Ogres, and then they're going to be, and Path to Exile. Like,
yeah.
Cameron, it did really hurt me. Like, I just bit the bullet because I didn't want to, you know, if you do the math, a lot of times it's just more efficient. I didn't have a lot of wild cards sitting around. So it's like, okay, I'll just spend the 30. It's $30. Now, if you are one of these people that buys gems by the $100 pack, which I tend to not, then it's $20. But if you just buy it like straight up for whatever the actual MSRP is, it's $30. And it's like, okay, cool. And it's like, I'm playing a lot of Dust Shadow. I don't know what else I'm going to do with any of this. And so, you know, a lot of our criticisms from last week, I think, hold true. But I think Death Shadows is very for real, and I'm hopeful that it does good things for the format. But then again, I'll be honest, man, this is my style of card. You know, like, I'll play Death Shadow Mirrors all day. That doesn't bother me. I mean, I've already crossed the Rubicon of going so down the well on my sequencing that I screw up and play a Death Shadow at 13 life and kill it on the spot. You know, it was one of those where it's like, okay, I'm going to play this Watery Grave, and then I'm going to Thoughtseize him, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to play my Death Shadow, and then I just click Death Shadow, and then I'm like, oh, man. So,
classic.
Yeah, classic Curtis. All right, so instead of doing one big segment, I do want to take a break here because I do need to refill my water. I'm going to do that. We're going to come back. We're going to kind of put a bow on Time Spiral Remastered. We'll be right back. All right, Cameron. So Friday, it's Time Spiral Remastered. Are you picking any of it up? Are you hoping to pick some of it up down the line? And what are your overall thoughts now that we've seen the whole kit and caboodle?
Oh, yeah, man. So no, I will not be picking this up. At some point, I might pick up some of the singles, things to just kind of, you know, fill out my collection if I need to. But generally, even though I'm not picking this up, I'm very positive on the set itself. I think this is a fun way to get more cards out into the wild, which, you know, broken record of, I love having. I think the cards that they're putting into the format or into this remastered set, I think there's going to be some really fun interactions that you could do, playing draft or something like that. But then I am also very negative on this because I just don't understand how I just want this on all of their products, you know, on the digital platforms. I don't know. I look at this and I get like, oh man, just to have Damnation would be so great. And historic, and we're not going to have that, right? So I don't know. I have like a, I go back and forth with how I feel about the set overall. But overall, like I'm fine with it existing and getting more cards out there.
Yeah, to piggyback on that point, you know, the kind of thing that we're not talking about with this set is I think Tarmogoyfs are like $35 now.
Jeez.
You know, so if you're just in the market for some of these playables, and you're not after the old border cred or whatever, you're just okay, hey, I really need some Goyfs. Hey, you're in good shape. I think Jund is actually the most affordable it's been relative to other other times in Magic's history. So, I mean, I know fetch lands are expensive, and but you could build Jund, you know, relatively easily compared to times in the past. Modern Jund, I should say. But here's the thing. I feel very contained. My shop isn't going to have a pre-release on this. I'm sure I could go get a pre-release box and, I don't know, shuffle it up in my house or something. But like you, I'm a little confined. Would really like to be playing this on a digital platform other than MTGO. So that feels like a missed opportunity. The other thing that is worth pointing out here is like you can't help but wonder about these old border cards and if they've kind of underdone it. Because yes, clearly it's meeting a demand, but like what is Ponder now? Like $40 for just a non-foil Ponder, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And look, yes, you can go get a Ponder for $4 or whatever they're worth, and that's cool. They're, you know, it's a very easy card to find. You don't have to play the old border. But it would have been nice if they would have had it a little bit more available. Like, look, the only old border card that I'm, like, snapping off, like, right away is Past in Flames. And that's super affordable, so I'm not really stressed about it. But I just would have liked it to have been a little bit more accessible, you know?
Totally agree. Yeah.
It does feel like that we're going to get down the line and these old border cards are going to be worth just a bucket load, right? And I hope their printing quality is up to snuff. I know I haven't bought paper cards for like a year, but I have been told that the printing quality is quite a bit down. So that kind of, you know, it doesn't really matter if it's in an old border, if the paper quality is bad or the foiling quality is bad. But the big picture is this is a fantastic set. I have some ideas of other sets that I think they should remaster next. Let me throw this one past you, Cameron. Rise of the Eldrazi. Re-released. Not remastered.
Mm-hmm.
Re-released. What do you think?
I would love that. I mean, that would be huge. That's like a set that I never got to play myself. So drafts galore, man. Like, I would totally want to do that. Yeah, there's a lot of potential there for sure.
Yeah. Hear me out here. We do not have to have, quote, remastered, where we have some cards and not other cards or whatever. Certain sets are so good limited. They're so good and limited that you could just straight up reprint them. Rise of the Eldrazi is one of these sets. Dominaria, one of those sets. Just give it to me again. You want to juice it? Do some alternate art. Or do some old borders. That's all fine. But what I'm telling you, Wizards, this is gravy. This is a gift. You don't have to do literally any work. That file that you have, control C, control V that bad boy, and let's go. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Cameron, Arena. They could get those cards on Arena as a result. Just a straight freaking re-release.
No, man. You know what they should do? Just make you spend $30 on 4 Death Shadows. Like, that's what they really should do. Like, that's the logical thing, to milk it as long as they possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, dude, the Time Spiral Remastered not being on Arena, I have to believe that's a COVID thing. That's a we couldn't do it logistically thing. Because, dude, honestly, how many times would you have drafted this set on Arena? How much money would you have spent? I mean,
yeah.
Baseline, no questions asked. I'm plugging in $100 to Time Spiral Remastered Arena. No questions asked. You just got that out of me.
And you know what could happen is just release Time Spiral. Like, it's not a historic product, maybe. Like, maybe you release those things later. I don't know. Maybe that's a horrible, bad idea. But, I mean, you've put Mox in Arena, and it worked totally fine. Just let me draft this set. You know, I want to do that so badly, and I just don't have a means right now to do that. And that's probably the biggest feel bad that I have.
Yeah. So whatever it is next, Homelands Remastered, whatever it is that they want to do, okay? Whatever it is that comes next, they need to put it on Arena as well. Again, Historic can just be whatever cards are on Arena, okay? And I would just, it would just be cool. You don't have to go in order, guys. Because Shadows over Innistrad Remastered would be next, and I would have no problem with that. I really liked Eldritch Moon. Like, I like those two sets. I think they were fun. So we're probably going to get those remastered. That's fine. Then we kind of get into this thing of, like, well, what do you want to do next? Can we jump around? Right? Like, once we get to Theros, do I really need a Theros remastered? Probably not.
Yeah.
But
I mean, we got Thalia, man. We got, like, Knight. Like, you know, I mean, there's, like, choosing random things. Just do Kamigawa. Let's just have all of Kamigawa, right?
Yeah.
Get Jit into the format. That's what I want.
Dude, they're not even comfortable with Sword of Body, or they're not even comfortable with Sword of Light and Shadow. Jit is not happening. Right? Like, holy cow. Neither is Batter Skull. But, like, or just do, like, a big mega set of, like, Zendikar or old, the Return to Ravnica plus Ravnica.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Let's do something cool, guys. But I'm really thinking that the next remastered after the Shadows of Innistrad is where we're going to get Pioneer remastered and try to get Pioneer on the client. And
what's Pioneer again?
It's a non-rotating format that isn't Legacy, is what you need to know. But yeah, I guess our suggestions are all over the place. But what I'm trying to say is, if we are really serious about differentiating between Historic and Pioneer, and Historic is going to be every card that's on Arena, and eventually going down the line going to be non-reserveless Legacy, then I would be really cool to just come up with a set that is just straight up Historic, that is not a Masters, that is us just honoring the past. And if you want to do, like, Onslaught Block Remastered, and those cards are just there, that would be a ton of fun. Anyway.
That would be awesome.
And you could even do it at, like, a discount if you think it's a set that people aren't going to, you know. You know, let's say you do Lorwyn Remastered and you're worried people aren't going to get after it in the same way. Well, just sell the packs for cheaper, or sell the drafts for cheaper, and then I'll burn through them, I promise. I'll make up your difference. All right, Cameron. Well, let's get out of this segment. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about what else we've been up to. All right, Cameron. So here it says EA Play, which makes a lot of sense, because I got a notification that you had scored more achievements than me this week. And I was like, wait a minute, what? But, like, when you're on your Game Pass app, it shows, like, who scored more points of you in your friends list.
And interesting.
I was very confused there for a minute. But now it makes sense because you're on EA Play. So did you sign up through this through Game Pass, or how did you do that exactly?
Yeah, so I signed up through it through Steam. They had it as well. They had, like, a 99-cent trial or $30 for a year. And I thought, you know, I will definitely put $30 in for 12 months of EA games, because there are certain things that are coming out, like Mass Effect Remastered, the Star Wars stuff. Like, I mean, there's just plenty of stuff that
Tiger Woods get Golf.
Exactly. I'm going to get my return on investment with this. But EA Play, man, it's their subscription service to, like, tons of EA titles. I find it to be a really good value. If you're into specific things of EA, if you like EA's style of games, because I feel like they succeed in, like, three specific genres, right? Sports, some really good shooters across the board. I think they sometimes develop some of the best, the most fun shooters. And then, yeah, you know, they do things like the Dragon Ages and Mass Effects to me very well. Like, I think the Western RPG style EA kind of owns in some ways, and I like those games. So anyway, $30, me being able to play the whole Mass Effect collection and all of Battlefield with my buddies on the PC is great. So I'm just kind of, I'm sitting here, much like when I had the Microsoft Pass, Game Pass, the level of value you can get out of $10 a month or $5 a month, if you had told me in 2008 that this wasn't going to happen, I would have, I would just called you a liar, because like you're getting so much value. The fact that I spent $60 on insert bad PS3 game from 2008, you know, and I felt like I got no value out of it. And now to be able to just play literally everything from EA is, it's just insane, you know? So I don't know what I'm saying other than it's a great value proposition to me. And there's a huge catalog of like really high quality games.
Yeah. So if on console, if you have Game Pass, you get EA Play as well.
Okay.
So that's like included, but the waters are a little muddy there in terms of like what benefits you do and don't get. But I did, like you, I downloaded Jedi Fallen Order. I had finished Fallen Order forever ago, but like I wanted to see what the new update looked like. And I was like, oh yeah, this is pretty and it runs well. And then I deleted it. So yeah. I don't know what that says about me. Also in service, in the service land. So all of the old Bethesda titles became active on Game Pass this last week as well. So
nice.
It's almost too much. We talked about this with Marvel Unlimited. Like you just open and you're like, what is happening here? It's entirely too much value. And, you know, I always think like these game services, they're actually better bang for your buck than something like Netflix, because of the, you know, whenever you're watching Netflix, a lot of those things you either would not have paid for in the past or you would have included in a giant bundle of cable or whatever. Whereas these games, you're right. Like, dude, these were like minimum $40 games when they were new. And there's a ton of them, and you can just go back through them. And this is the best way to kind of enjoy games of the last like 10-ish, 12-ish years. There's still this horrible blank spot. Basically, the early 2000s and a little bit before, where you just can't replay some of these things. And it's incredibly frustrating. And so, you know, that is neither here nor there. But if you're like, let's say you're really into GameCube games or Dreamcast games or PS2 stuff, it is a real rocky road to get those where you want them to be.
Absolutely.
So in tandem with that, Cameron, I'm in the process of rearranging / figuring out my downstairs. And basically, my objective is to fully separate my office from my game room. In the past, I've had an office and it's had like my old tube TV and some of my old games. And then my TV room has, you know, some of my current systems. And anyway, just constantly trying to reset that up. Well, in the process of rearranging, I now have room for some number of other things, up to and including an arcade machine. What a nightmare this is, Cameron. So I definitely want to have an arcade machine. Obviously, there are, step one is there's these kind of particle board, 3/4 arcade machines that run on LCD screens, and I don't have a huge problem with them. I actually thought I would until I actually tried them through my work, and the biggest problem I have, I told you this, is the joysticks. Like, I think the joysticks are not great. The buttons aren't great, but they're universal swappable ones, so you can just pop them and switch them. But the input lag, even on something like Galaga, which is like very, very sensitive to the input lag, like I kind of felt like it was fine. Yes, it's not perfect, but it's close enough to me. You have that option. You have the option of buying an old one. And I'd say more than half the ones that you find online have already been altered in some way. And they also weigh, we'll say, a lot. Okay. Third option. Build one, and you can build one of using a motherboard for an old arcade machine, or you can use a PC, or you can use what's called, have you ever heard of a Mister?
Not familiar.
A Mister is like a $200-$300 computer that specializes in emulating old arcade machines and old boards. If you want to play something that is like in terms of like accuracy and response accuracy and all that on an LCD screen, you end up getting a Mister.
Okay.
But these things are like incredibly tinkery. I mean, if you look at it, it looks like a circuit board for the cryptography breaker thing in the movie Sneakers. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
sure.
It does not look like an actual product. Or you can buy the things from the company Analog, where they have they remake NES, Sega Genesis, whatever, that plug into an LCD screen with zero latency. They are sold out of all their stuff right now because of the microchip shortage.
Dang. Wow.
And so I'm just left with this nightmare fuel of a decision. How much do I care about accuracy? How much do I care about playability? But like, dude, I'm telling you, there's this parental part of me that wants to get one of these actual arcade machines and fix it up right because of what these savages have done to them. Okay? I feel like it belongs in the museum guy, right? But like, I'm telling you, man, you'll see a Street Fighter cabinet and someone has ripped out all the guts, painted over half of it, and they're like, hey, it's an arcade machine that plays 1,200 games.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just want to take it home and be like, what did they do to you, man? Let's make this right. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know what I'm going to do or if I'm going to do anything in the near future, Cameron, but it's actually killing me on the inside to know that this is like a... And look, I get it. Some of these things, the circuit board went bad, okay? And that you don't have a choice. You've got to refurb it. But they've done it in such a shoddy way, you know? Like... how are you not just putting Street Fighter back in that Street Fighter Championship Edition arcade cabinet? Like, that's just wrong, right? And maybe I'll hear from somebody and they'll be like, hey, I did this and it worked out great. And so maybe I'm just being too puritanical about it. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm excited. Hey, I'm like super excited that you're doing this. Like,
you'll be able to come back to my place one day.
Exactly, right? When I finally can do that, I'll just be sitting there sipping some hot tea while playing Street Fighter. It's going to be great. And I'm really excited to see like how this all kind of shapes up, but kind of like it's a deep, dark hole, right? Like if I were to stare into the abyss of this, like I don't think I would ever come out. And so I'm glad that I can at least push you into that abyss and see what shakes out and I reap the benefits.
Yeah. And that's how it should be, Cameron. But like, you know what's wild is, so specifically Neo Geo stuff is like the thing I want. And Neo Geo stuff is like infamously expensive, but you can get like the actual circuit board and the arcade cart for Samurai Showdown 2 for $100 together. The only thing you don't have is the rest of the freaking cabinet.
Yeah. I mean, that garage is screaming for a wood shop. I'm saying that.
Now, I am also, if there are things I'm particular about, one of them is my car is in the garage. I live in the Midwest where everyone has a garage that is way too small for their big, dumb SUV. Like, that is just a thing. Like, I'm looking out my window right now. Every single neighbor has their car out in their driveway, right? And, you know, they probably have a wood shop or whatever in their garage. That's fine. But, like, I as you know, I hold on to cars for a long time. That's the secret, man. You keep it indoors.
Keep it. Yep.
I did have a mechanic once tell me he thinks that cars do better if you leave them outside. I don't think that's...
I disagree.
I don't think that's logical. Not in the Midwest, man. Not when we're hitting -8 degrees.
Yep.
All right, Cameron. If someone would like to get in touch with you and talk to you about your sick graphics card setup, EA Play, or arcade machines, where could they find you?
It's Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And I'm @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeBeatMTG. We'll check you guys next week.